It's wonderful to see your faces, so I invite everyone who's not yet back on video to join us as well. So, this week's parsha, our Torah reading for this week, Vayera, includes so many complex but also sparsely narrated stories. It's hard to remember all of them. We remember the beginning, the three messengers come to prophesy the birth of Isaac to Sarah and Abraham, and Sarah laughs. We tend to remember the end, that Abraham takes Isaac to be sacrificed, but stops at the last moment. In between, Abraham negotiates for the safe passage of one righteous family from the evil town of Sodom, and Sodom is destroyed. He passes off his wife Sarah as his sister, so she is taken into the palace of King Abimelech until God intervenes. Sarah gives birth. Then she insists that Hagar and Ishmael leave the household. And then Abraham is convinced he's supposed to take Isaac to be sacrificed. And then he doesn't sacrifice Isaac. As Reb Moshe, Reggie, Yocheved, and I discussed these stories as we prepared for our contemplative Shabbat service, which is tomorrow morning, at 10 o'clock, we hope all of you will join us in one way or another, but preferably in person, because we all know that being in the actual presence of other people makes it easier to enter into a state of spacious awareness when we share that experience. So, as we were discussing this parsha in preparation, we saw these different stories tied together by a few recurring images and themes. One recurring image, lifting the eyes, introduces a theme of seeing or not seeing. Vayisa enav, he or she lifted their eyes and saw. Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the three visitors. Hagar, despairing that her son would die of thirst, moves away from him lest she have to watch him die. She does not want to see, but God opens her eyes so she can see a well of water and their salvation. And Abraham, about to sacrifice his son, is stopped by a messenger from Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Abraham lifted his eyes and saw here a ram caught in the thicket by its horns. In all three of these repeated images of lifting the eyes, there's a suggestion that whatever was seen when Abraham or Hagar lifted their eyes, the visitors, the well, the ram, that those things had been there all along. So let's remember this theme, that redemption is not just about what's happening out there, but it's about our own mental state, our ability to see what's there. A second theme is hospitality and its opposite, exclusion. Abraham welcomes the guest, brings water to wash their feet, serves them food. Lot, his brother, welcome, or cousin, nephew, family member, welcomes the same visitors and is redeemed. But Abraham has to violate his own values of generosity and hospitality when Sarah tells him to cast his son Ishmael and Ishmael's mother out of the household. And God tells him to do as Sarah says. The theme and the question that ties these two themes together is, who do we listen to and what do we pay attention to and what do we believe? In other words, what do we do with these thoughts, these commandments that come at us from different directions? The overarching theme connects what we do and do not see with our conflict when we feel commanded to act against our compassionate values. And this is expressed in the story that ends this parsha, the binding and unbinding of Isaac. So let's go to the beginning, the first verse of Vayera. Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh was seen by him as he was sitting at the opening of the tent. And oddly, in the next verse, only after Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh is seen, the second verse, does it say Avraham lifted his eyes. So Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh was seen before Avraham lifted his eyes, suggesting to us that Avraham, described as sitting at the opening of his tent, was perhaps meditating, his eyes closed or looking down, so that Avraham's seeing Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh was probably not a visual experience. In contrast, in the second verse, Avraham lifts his eyes and sees with his eyes three men standing right before him. Because the text is sparse, we can understand it in different ways. We can imagine that the three men are messengers representing God, and that this is what the text means when it says God manifested as three messengers seen by him. That the first and the second verses refer to the same thing, seeing the messengers who are messengers of God. Or we could imagine that the first verse is describing a different kind of seeing, an experience that can't be described in words. But it's an experience of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh awareness, experiencing a perspective from Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh's point of view that prompts Avraham to greet these three strangers as guests of honor, to run to them and bow as if his vision of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh has enabled him to greet every person, everything that arises in his vision, as a welcome guest rather than as an intruder. This image may remind us of a poem by Rumi called The Guest House, which is often read at meditation retreats and meditation teachings. It begins, "This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness." The poem counsels us to greet them all at the door laughing, even the dark thought, the shame, the malice, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So the image of Abraham sitting at the opening of his tent, eager to greet the new arrivals, brought to mind for me another image that's shared in a commentary on Reb Schneerson, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Now, I shared this image in a previous Friday morning talk, as well as in our contemplative High Holiday service, so I apologize if you don't enjoy recalling it as much as I do. People would ask the Rebbe if he believed that he was the Messiah, as so many others believed he was. One Hasidic scholar explained that Reb Schneerson was clear that the Messiah would not appear in a specific geographic place at a specific historical time. He explained redemption does not depend on time, but on our mental state. All one needs to do, he said, is open the door, provided one has heard the knock. Or perhaps one will hear the knock only when one realizes that there is no door but the one we have built in our mind. Abraham's tent has no door. He's sitting at the opening. But he does hear the knock, and he greets the three strangers as welcome guests. This is a beautiful description of our meditation practice, each thought, each feeling that arises. Can we simply allow it to visit and pass through, like this three visitors? So let's fast forward to the end of the parsha, the binding and unbinding of Isaac. This deeply disturbing story has inspired not only a vast set of religious commentaries, but also great art, literature, philosophy, and moral treatises over the centuries. As I despaired of ever making sense of the story, or of even tasting this vast body of work, I found a theme from our meditation practice in a recording of one of Norman Fisher's talks. So I found a theme from Norman Fisher's talk that was also illuminated by one Rashi commentary, as well as by a description of Emmanuel Levinas's commentary on the unbinding of Isaac. This was a commentary from someone who wrote a book, someone named Aaron Kohler, who wrote a book called Unbinding Isaac. So there is a Rashi commentary that expands on the moment when God's messenger intervenes and stops Abraham from sacrificing his son. This Rashi commentary represents Abraham as frustrated, registering a complaint. God, first, you promised me Isaac would be the seed of a great and mighty nation. Then you told me to take my son to make a sacrifice. Now you tell me, lay not thy hand upon thy son. What do you want from me? And God replies, I told you to take your son up the mountain. I never said to slay him. You have taken him up, now take him down. Could this commentary mean that Abraham was not understanding God correctly? Rashi's commentary highlights the unreliable nature of what we think we know, of what happens when we believe our thoughts. Our teacher, Norman Fisher, described this vulnerability in his recent talk on the tragedy of Israel-Palestine and how our practice can restore sanity through non-thinking, what we do in meditation. He says, thinking is based on the assumption that we know ourselves. In meditation, we are able to stop allowing our unexamined sense of self to continuously drive our thinking. Our unexamined sense of self usually drives our thinking. In meditation, we check the assumption that it is me thinking. Instead, we let a thought that comes, come, and go. Instead of relating to it with self-interest, we let it be, we let it go, and allow ourselves to be surprised at what happens next. In fact, we do that all the time when we hear a bird sing. We don't think, that's mine. We let it come and go. That is non-thinking. Norman says, if you practice this for a long time, you will be less likely to be fooled by what you think. Was Abraham fooled by what he thought? In a talk on his book, Unbinding Isaac, Aaron Kohler described Emmanuel Levinas's emphasis on the unbinding of Isaac, on Abraham's ultimately not obeying the commandment that he thought he heard. This is based in part on Levinas's noting that the story of Abraham did not always contain the angel as a messenger. I don't know where that comes from, but that it was actually Abraham himself who refrained from killing his son. Levinas is well known for his understanding of the human impulse toward compassion as based on seeing the face of the other. In truly seeing this face, we see the other is just like me, with the same feelings, the same human responses. From this comes our sense of interconnection and oneness with other beings. And from this awareness, this quality of seeing, come our ethical imperatives. From this perspective, Avraham, looking into the face of Isaac, cannot possibly sacrifice his son. This transition from Avraham's bewildered, driven, preoccupied state to the sudden sanity found in seeing the face of the other is a metaphor for the return to sanity that we experience in meditation. Avraham, like us, gets caught up in his own thoughts, feels driven to action even when the message is bewildering and impossible. Gazing into the face of another, the artificial separation and the otherness of the other dissolve. Just as in meditation, we recognize the ever-changing, permeable, interconnected nature of this body-mind process. We are, for a moment, released from our sense of having a solid and separate self. And we are released from having to believe everything we think. Or, as Norman says, if you practice this for a long time, you will be less likely to be fooled by what you think.